Guys didn't think a huge scandal in the sports world was going to go by without hearing from your good old friend the Polish guy, did you? Well, of course, it's pretty obvious or pretty easy to figure out what most of this podcast is going to be about. Really have two subjects in Model American. We have Penn State, and I give my theory on an alternative for NCAA football as it stands now. For the Penn State mess, I'm going to have to give you a little background here. My job here is to give you all the thoughts and all the ideas that I have come up with from reading as many articles as I possibly could after work this week. And I want this podcast to be the one-stop shop for all the players involved in this absolutely disgusting ordeal. And most of the information I give you is gleaned from several articles from everywhere that you can possibly imagine. PennLive.com, ESPN, SI, several other sources that have come forward. And probably the worst things I say are the conjecture, the things that are just my opinion. And I've painted a little bit of a picture here. And of course, there's guesses. The idea is that I will give you all the information. I will give you all the theories. I will tell you the theory that I believe most. And hopefully at the end of this, you can come up with your own conclusion. Because there's no right answer in this. There was no right answer on how Penn State was going to handle this or how the future is going to be for Penn State. But I'm going to give you every character involved. I'm going to give some of the theories I've heard and dissect those. Most of all, before getting started, if you want to read the 23-page indictment by the grand jury, on Gerald Sandusky, I don't recommend doing it. Take what you've seen and read yourself. Take it for what it is. If you really want to know what is said in there to the intricate detail, go right ahead. But I will say it's one of the... I cannot remember another thing other than this in my life that I wish I could unsee or unread. And I will say that I wish I could unread what I've done. In fact, so much so that if in the future there is a way to timestamp the human brain and try to direct alcohol with the correct electrical input pulses to kill those particular brain cells, I will do so. That technology doesn't exist yet, but I like to think maybe someday it will, and I can kill the memories of reading that 23-page report. The first and most obvious person to talk about is Joe Paterno. I have to give some background here, and I don't want to sound like that I support what Paterno obviously did in this situation, although I cannot possibly not be skewed in some way to sound a little bit pro-Paterno. But I will give you the facts without my opinion in it here as well. Unfortunately, I will be slightly skewed, and it's a subconscious thing that's going to be hard to fight. I went to Ohio State. The other place I would have gone to was Penn State. I enjoyed both my visits to both colleges, and the only reason I went to Ohio State over Penn State, honestly, was because of the in-state tuition difference in cost. It was purely a financial decision. Clearly, I was a numbers guy way before I ever knew that I would be one. Now, this situation, I'm sure most of you know the general things going on. This situation arises from one particular detail, and it balloons into much, much more. And that detail is exactly how detailed was Mike McQueary when he talked to Joe Paterno before Paterno went to his superiors, which, again, legally, he's okay. And there's two reasons why he's legally okay. Not just because he said he was, and not because his superiors seem to think so as well, but because the grand jury believes Joe Paterno and how he described things. In short, the part that comes from 2002, a horrific act is witnessed by then graduate assistant Mike McQueary. Mike McQueary is a former Penn State quarterback, an unspectacular one at that. In fact, I think I saw him play when I saw a Penn State game. I think they beat Northern Illinois that day. It was pretty convincing. Northern Illinois, I believe, had Garrett Wolf, and Mike McQueary was the quarterback. I don't think they had Wolf yet, actually. Wolf was another couple of years. But he sees a horrific thing described in many places. I'm not going to describe it here. It just makes me want to throw up, and I don't feel like doing that after a long week of work. He then, instead of immediately going to police or Paterno, he calls his dad. His dad is friends with Jerry Sandusky, the very guy he just saw doing this horrific act. At this time, Mike McQueary is a graduate assistant. The community in college football coaching, the way I've read to understand it, I've never been a part of it, but the way I've read to understand it is that it's a very delicate political world. You will see many of the guys that fire you and many of the guys you fire again through life. You have to understand that. And you also have to understand that there's certain people you don't cross, or therefore, you don't have a future. Fearing this, fearing his own future, is the true catalyst of all this. And I think that's the biggest problem I have with the whole, well, there's two huge problems I have with the whole thing. Where the actions have gone since the incident. Obviously, the most horrible thing is these kids' lives and what they have to deal with. But when I'm talking about the case and how it's moved forward, the first thing is that McQueary didn't want to rat out Sandusky. And it's very likely that his father told him to dumb down the language to Joe Paterno to save his own career and not bring down Sandusky. This is already 4 years after an investigation on Sandusky in 1998 came with no charges. And the weirdest thing about that is that, well, there are no coincidences in life, folks. There's a reason behind every action. Just as there is a reason why it came out this week after win 409 for Joe Paterno. There is no coincidence that Sandusky, age 55, in his prime as a coach, all of a sudden resigns in 1999 after the allegations involve even a sting operation set up by the police department. And then nothing was done. This could have been stopped in 1998. This could have been stopped even earlier than that. I'll get to that. If there's pauses in this podcast, forgive me. I have several notes in front of me. If I go off too much on a tangent, I'm going to take time to collect myself, because there is so much here. So the biggest issue I have in the beginning is McQuarrie is the person who, he's the first person who had a first-hand account and could have saved children, and he chose to make sure his career went on track. Well, guess what, Mike? You don't have much of a career left now. If you somehow survive the public sentiment that's going to come from the fact that you, out of all the five big names from Penn State are involved, that you still have the job, you've got another thing coming. You were putting in an unfortunate situation where there was no win. But children could have been saved. There was no win for you personally. And it was an unfortunate situation to be put into. Because, yeah, you bring down Sandusky, you bring down Penn State, you possibly bring down Paterno, you're done. Well, guess what? You bought yourself 8 years. You're still done. And now you have to live with the children you could have saved. In my opinion, that you could have saved. Unfortunately, this thing goes back much, much further than that. The second question is, beyond when, what did Paterno know and when did he know it? That's what everyone wants to know. Everyone's in denial here that loves Joe Paterno. I'm still somewhat in denial. It's ironic that an elongation of Paterno's last name is a word for of the father, and his nickname is Joe Pa, and he really should have been a father to these kids in this situation, and there's no forgiving him for that. What cannot be ignored is the situation that it occurred as itself. People talk about Joe Paterno being the most powerful man in Penn State history. That is true, but what must be realized here is, although the men involved here, Curley, Schultz, Spinier, these are all longtime Penn State guys, but they were not running Penn State until between 1993 and 1997. They tried to push out Joe Paterno in 2004. Paterno had enough power then to keep his job, but Paterno's true power was between 1956 and 1993. These guys are not really pro-Paterno guys. Spanier, maybe. Curley and Schultz, no. So there's the argument of this, what I call a terrible moral decision by Joe Paterno, because I don't possibly, of all I believe, and I do believe that Paterno was truthful to the grand jury because they believe him. I find it hard to believe that hearing the words in a sexual nature involving a small child wouldn't resonate more with someone with the credentials that Paterno had. And Paterno's credentials, what I'm talking about, is his true action for when he really did help children and Penn State and others his entire life. Paterno was always a charitable man, and he has helped grow Penn State into a great university and a great institution. And the cloudiness of that power and the cloudiness of how to save institutions, how to save the castle that's been built, led to an incredibly bad moral decision. And it's for people to decide on their own whether or not that decision is enough to ruin an entire legacy in many ways, you could think about the most philanthropic person in their life, that you've ever known in your life, and think about how you'd feel about that person if they just committed cold murder. Well, Paterno didn't do that, but the analogy, it works if you think about it. So how would you feel about that person? I don't know. It's obviously the worst thing that that person has done in their life. I think I'll always think of Joe Paterno. I'm going to think of what he is. A guy who almost every time in his life was truly what he stood for and what he seemed to be standing for, but made an incredibly moralistically wrong, terrible decision that hurt people that I don't even know if he, at this age, has the capacity to understand. And that's just what he is. I never admired him in a deity, like a deity, like he seems to be by some people. And I had family, like I said, middle of Pennsylvania growing up, well, real eastern Pennsylvania, close enough that I knew about pretty much everything Penn State. Now, I understand that there is no way that once the firestorm began, and because of what Paterno's guilty of creating himself to what he was, and that's why he doesn't have a job anymore, he was going to become the focal point of all this all along. Let's start with conspiracy theories. Is it entirely unbelievable to think that Curley and Schultz, let's just start with this. This sort of cover-up thing for Sandusky, I believe, has been happening for a very, very long time, much before, basically since they started in 2002. I mean, it was in 1993, 1997, around that time. I think it's hard to believe that someone could work around someone for so long, and this is where I'm talking about Paterno again, where you wouldn't at least think there's something funny about it. Although Barry Switzer has this idea that, the sickening thought that he knew every secret about every assistant coach he ever had and that sort of thing, that's not believable. That's not believable. You're talking about worlds where people are blindsided by stories all the time about how guys didn't know that the guy was dressing up like Freddie Mercury with a wig and going down to the Blue Oyster every evening. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, there's plenty wrong with this whole situation, but it's easy to get blindsided by things. Much easier than Switzer. Everyone has a private life. Everyone has skeletons in the closet. And I guess that's the biggest problem with Penn State, and I'm going to get to that more later. But getting back to the point, is it entirely unbelievable that this thing came from the top long ago and that a 75-year-old man was deceived? Absolutely, Paterno could have followed up in his own volition. And he's going to have to live with that. But it's pretty clear when you're talking about the people involved here and how weird some of the things are. Let's get to some of the inconsistencies coming from the top. One thing that's inconsistent about McQueary, I have to give him credit for, and this came from the Penn Live article. It's interesting that McQueary softened the blow to Paterno. And I'm saying this again because a grand jury agrees with this. The grand jury says that the testimony that Paterno gave is consistent with what the query gave them. That is why charges came upon Schultz and Curley. Okay? So I'm using that, and that's why I'm giving it as fact. Michael Quirer once broke up a knife fight between players that could have gotten very bloody. So McQuarrie, who before in his life was bold, and in this situation became a coward. And it seemed to happen as soon as he talked to his dad. Maybe before that. Maybe he was always thinking about his job. But it doesn't change the fact that McQuarrie did once do that. Now, after McQuarrie met with Paterno, a day after meeting with his dad, McQuarrie then met with Curley and Schultz 10 days after their meeting with Paterno, and Paterno was not present. You think maybe Curley and Schultz might have told McQuarrie just to keep his mouth shut forever? To never give Paterno the details? Is it possible that the details that are so much more disgusting than saying horsing around, wrestling around, or even just using the word sexual nature? Hell, Degeneration X uses things that are of a sexual nature. But they were not nearly... That's not ever nearly what was going on in that washroom. Do I really believe that? I don't know. It's an interesting theory, though, and it's an interesting idea. I still go back to the idea that Paterno had to know something, and he made a terrible moral decision. Going back to the scumbags at the top, we go back to District Attorney Ray Greiser. Greiser is the one who eventually did not pursue charges against Jerry Sandusky. Lead investigator of the case was a detective, Ron Schreffler. The other investigator was told eventually, Jerry Lauro, that Scheffler never told him about the details of Sandusky's confession. Remember, Sandusky confessed in 1998. This 1998 case is very possible that Paterno knew nothing about this, since this was an investigation by Scheffler, Lauro, and Greiser, and there was no charges brought. It did involve a sting operation where Sandusky basically admitted to what he did. He wished that he could die. He wished that he could get forgiveness. There's never anything followed up, and after 1998, Greiser eventually disappeared in 2005. He was just declared dead this year. A family spokesman for the Greiser family, this is also from the Penn Live article, said that his uncle developed a bitter taste for the football program and Paterno. This is an indictment on Paterno, that maybe he did know more. I still lean towards more of Schultz and Curley covering this up, because in their grand jury testimony, they seem to forget all the details that McQuarrie told them. And they have a lot to uphold here. And since Paterno was not at the meeting with McQuarrie, it's more believable to think that the people protecting the gates of the institution would be the people at the very top. And although Paterno is a right arm of that institution, he's not necessarily involved in every decision. Although he's a deity to many people, or was, he's still just a football coach. In certain situations, he's still just a football coach. I'm sure over the years, Paterno has been part of covering up minor instances and denying things that are right in front of his nose to protect the institution. I guess it is an amazing thing that the NCAA never investigated Penn State, and that's a reputation they try to uphold. And of course, eventually this is another way everyone involved try to protect the institution. We have McQuarrie saving his job. We have Curley involved. Let's get to a little bit of the background on the head guys. Curley was the first guy there of this administrative staff. He came in 1993. He was a new guy. He's not a Joe Pa guy. Spanier came around in 1995. He loves interviews, and of course he never had one after this, except for supporting Curley and Schultz. Schultz has been around for a total of 40 years in and around the Penn State campus, and he was also technically, if you want to say it, head of university police. Technically led finance. And he was another guy who was apparently with the university on an interim basis, but retired. Sounds a lot like the deal that Sandusky got. I want to believe Paterno, but I just can't. I believe his testimony, and I believe that's why he'll stay out of jail. He admitted doing more, which implies that he wished he could have done more, which implies he knows that he made a conscious decision not to do more. Maybe he didn't want to know more about his friend. And, you know, that's one thing not being reported. Of course him and Sandusky were friends. It's just terrible. There's other people involved here that also that are not in the news but perhaps could have helped here. There's Second Mile President Jack Rakovitz. If you don't know, the Second Mile is one of the most disgusting facts about this whole thing, other than the things I read in the report. Jerry Sandusky started the Second Mile program in 1977. Its intent was to help at-risk or needy children. Of course, those are the type of children that are easy to prey upon if you're a person who would take advantage of people, I would guess. I would guess the grand jury testimony confirms this is a pool to find victims. There's school administrators were at Central Mountain High School who allowed Sandusky to take the boy out of class without permission. Parents didn't know about this till long after, until the student became one of the victims, and the head victim that came forward in 2008, and the reason why we're talking today. Now, the Second Mile says they, of course, they say they know nothing. They did find out about a ban from Sandusky in the locker room, which never really happened and was admittingly unenforceable. When Sandusky was pushed out in 1999 to try to make sure this never came out, he made a very shrewd move. He left with emeritus status, which allowed him access to all the Penn State facilities where he had been around for, 30 years? Whatever, 22 years? Whatever it was. Which means Sandusky could have access to the ground he knows so well, he knew so well for so long. And we can talk about other coaches doing more. We can talk about people from the second mile doing more. We can talk about the five big players from Penn State doing more. But I think the worst thing about this entire situation is how we're not talking enough about Jerry Sandusky. And I don't want to hear this crap about he'll get his in court. No, for as much as Joe Paterno is being vilified, we need to talk about Jerry Sandusky. We need to talk about, you know, before I get to Sandusky to kind of wrap up everything, because he's the last step in all this, let me get to two other points. There's been some arguments going back and forth about not playing football at Penn State for the rest of the year. Or not playing, or canceling the game this weekend, which is tomorrow now. I think that's crap. I don't think a whole community should suffer for the actions of, albeit several people, but technically they're portions of the institution and just a head football coach. The kids that are there now, save for the ones, few from Wednesday night, are not guilty of anything in this. The kids from Nebraska's football team are not guilty of any of this. The vendors in the stadium are not guilty of any of this. The vendors around the stadium are not guilty of any of this. The hotels that house the people to go see the games are not guilty of any of this. None of these people deserve to suffer for these actions. And in some ways, some of these people, maybe the victims themselves, I'm not necessarily saying that these victims are going to be going to Penn State football games and rooting on them. I'm just talking about it as an example of principle and trying to relay the idea that we have enough victims here. We don't need to destroy a local economy. We don't need to see a vendor not be able to pay his mortgage next month because the football game wasn't there. These people don't deserve that. I can't get past that. I'd be fine for moving them, but canceling? No, no. If you move them to a few later dates, you gotta have the games eventually. You gotta have the seniors who play for Penn State and knew nothing about it, will never be in that stadium again. You gotta let them play. And for the students at Penn State who are not guilty of anything, they deserve a break. They deserve to do something normal. Because this is not going to be normal for a very, very, very long time. So I don't buy into that one, okay? That's not necessary. As far as how harsh things are going to get for Penn State, I do have to give a little dig to the NCAA. The NCAA basically made a statement saying they were given a direct question about sanctions on Penn State, and they basically said that they let the authorities handle it. Well, I'll tell you what, in their own bylaws, which they basically lied about, the NCAA absolutely could do things about it. And I don't know if the football program as a whole deserves it. Maybe it does, because it was the face of the institution that these men tried to protect in the most horrible way that you can think about. But the rule, Art Barlaw, Article 19, the enforcement of the general principles of the NCAA. Rule 19.01.2. Individuals employed by or associated with member institutions for the administration, the conduct, or the coaching of intercollegiate athletics are, in final analysis, teachers of young people. Their responsibility is an affirmative one, and they must do more than avoid improper conduct or questionable acts. Their own moral values must be so certain and so positive that those younger and more pliable will be influenced by a fine example. Much more is expected of them than of the less critically placed citizen. Of course, the NCAA has to boast itself there about, you know, they're a little bit guilty of helping foster the idea of these people being more than just people, which is one of the biggest problems here. And Stuart Mandel has a good article about that, what I recommend reading as well, if you want to read after this. Hopefully I've given you enough. So the NCAA could go after Penn State. I don't know if it deserves it or not. You decide that. I really don't know. I'm still a little skewed, and I am jaded, and I am pissed off, and all these things. But it's hard to say whether the school deserves any more punishment, again, because you're punishing players that are there. You think that Curley and Schultz and Sandusky will get their due, and if there is a way that's found out that Paterno is guilty, he's guilty. I mean, there's no denying it. I'm not going to deny facts here. But let's get to the ultimate scumbag. I cannot believe Jerry Sandusky was awarded bail. I cannot believe this guy is walking around on this planet right now. There's no way. There's only 8 out there, and someone told me, I haven't read anything yet, I hear that the more are coming out of the woodwork, and you might be up to like 17 or 18 or 20 now. It's more than that. It's much, much more than that, I guarantee you that. This man is a sick, disgusting human being, and he should never be allowed to see the light of day again. I don't think they should kill him yet. Because really, there's only so far I'm willing to pay for this guy to even be on this planet. What this guy did, and what's not being talked about, and what should be talked about more, especially for how vilified Paterno has been, he's become the face of this. The face of this should be the victims and how they can be helped. And the other face should be Sandusky, although we shouldn't see his face. It's too disgusting. We can see the name, or come up with another nickname for him. Just fucking asshole, douchebag, fuckwad. Something like that. I'll go with that. I don't like to swear that harshly on the podcast, but, you know, when you, and my anger comes from what I've read, and comes from how many people he's deceived, and how, in my opinion, forget about the cover-up, forget about who did what, forget about who believed what when, forget about all the moralistically bad decisions made. Let's talk about this guy and what he obviously did. This guy has been sick for at least 34 years of his disgusting 67-year life. He's been abusing children for at least 34 years. He started Second Mile in 1977, clearly just to have a pool of children that he could pick from. He took these kids into his home. He took these needy kids into his home. He took them, he bought them things. He took them to football games. He promised them things. And he destroyed their life. This has been a bad week for Penn State football. Eventually this will die down as far as. But this is a bad life for every single one of those children, and now adults, and possibly bad lives for the people around them. It grows exponentially how many people this guy has affected with his actions, and he'll never understand it. He is a complete psychopath. He has terrible thoughts and should have been off the streets a long time ago. when he was pushed out in 1999, when he was supposed to be the guy who took over Paterno in 2004, I guarantee you that was part of the discussion. He made sure he got emeritus status. He made sure he had access to a place where he knew. He knew people's schedules. He knew where it was quiet. He even had a room set up in his house where these acts would take place. The man is guilty of something worse than premeditated murder. And that's what it is. This is premeditated child sexual abuse. I have my own theory on what should happen to this guy. Again, there's many that talk about that let's kill him right away. I understand that thought. I get it. I understand I don't really want to waste the money. I think he deserves some suffering, though. I think Jerry Sandusky deserves some suffering. I think he should live exactly 10 more years. I think that somehow in the trial, that's bound to take place. I think we should throw in some questions, like what are his least favorite things. They might seem irrelevant at the time. But this man should never see daylight again. He should never be allowed to interact with people again. He should be fed a puree of the most disgusting meal that he can think of in his head, and water. And that is all he should be given for the next 10 years. If he chooses to be a coward and not sustain his life, well, then we get in there and make sure he lives, just so he can suffer more. And even then, it won't be enough. No matter all the scenarios I have, it won't be enough. But eventually, we're going to have to get sick of paying to keep this guy alive. So just let him go. But just think about this, folks. We talk about premeditated murder. We talk about rape as a horrible crime. This is, in my opinion, the worst of the worst. This is premeditated child sexual abuse. You can't get more disgusting than that. You can't get more deplorable than that. Some of these kids, they either have attempted their lives since or have wished that they're dead. There's no coming back for them. And for all those loyalists out there for Joe Paterno, there's no coming back from him either. I will say this. Paterno has made horrible decisions here, but it's hard to forget how many times he was a good man. And I'm sure that his heart is absolutely broken. I'm sure he started to realize everything that was really happened. Even if he was deceived by management at the age of 75, which is not completely unbelievable of a statement. But I will say this. I think the face of Penn State, he won't last much longer. I don't see him living much more than a year after this. He'll go away. Eventually, in some circles, he's always going to be thought as a great guy. It's going to be interesting to find out in the future, you know, how he's thought about. Me, I'm going to consider him that great guy who made the worst possible decisions. And if a guy was a great guy 99% of the time and he wasn't for 1%, what is he then? That's the question. Me, I don't know yet. I don't know how I feel. The whole thing is sad. And it's saddest for those kids who have bad years since, bad lives, not just bad weeks, not bad days, bad lives, because of the most deplorable human being I've had to read about. I haven't read serial killer books, or I haven't read too many cases on child abuse, so this is kind of jumping all in with something as horrible as this and then having to read that report. This is really the worst thing I've probably ever read, what happened here. So let's move on. I hope I've given you enough that you can hear something I've said and go research it quickly, or take it and just form your own opinion. But hopefully I've laid out pretty much everything out that's out there. Now, I'm an alternative for NCAA football, part of the culprit in all this. Without NCAA football set up as it is, without treating coaches as we have, a lot of this doesn't happen. Kids are saved. Possibly just do, because there wouldn't be an institution like this. So there are alternatives for everything. There are alternatives in life. There's alternatives that could exist for NCAA football. I believe that the best way to solve NCAA football is to have a competing product. I believe one of the ways that we solve the student-athlete joke is to have a new product, a new decision for the student-athlete who just wants to be an athlete. You know, NCAA fights with this labor question. Are these students really labor for the university? Well, they might, as written on Grantland.com, they might have opened that Pandora's box by adding to the benefits that were already given just a few weeks ago. Here's the idea, folks. I think there should be, it's pretty much agreed that the couple of years at least necessary, the 3 years out of high school that a player needs to be able to be eligible for the NFL draft, that's a time for their bodies to truly mature to be able to handle the NFL. And anything younger than that can't handle it. And I don't think that an 18-year-old high school student could possibly handle the NFL physically. It's not possible. There may be one or two. There's always freaks. But we can only talk in generalities here. In general, the 18-year-old that we don't know and understand could not possibly handle the NFL. So here's the idea. The NFL should build itself a true minor league through its own teams, or some variation of. But here's my idea. And it doesn't take much to think about this. What if instead of going to college, an athlete had a choice of taking a 3-year, $120,000, non-guaranteed contract to play football for a team affiliated with an NFL team? 40-man rosters. The only way that anything could change is that if there was, of course, the only thing that roster changes would happen is if the high school draft, if a draftee chose a sign with the college, which they're still allowed to do up to August 15th, I would say, then you could fill these rosters with free agents then. Now, why would the teams do this, I guess? Why would we have a minor league team? Like, so for instance, why would there be the Cleveland Schnauzers or something? Or the Cleveland really, really injured puppies or something like that. Well, think about this. Imagine if you could teach, instead of going through college systems on offense and defense, what if you could teach 18 to 21-year-olds the NFL game starting at the age of 18, as in NFL offenses on an NFL field with NFL equipment, with the thinnest arms of your own staff? Of course you can increase NFL staffs to, so you're not bothering the head coach, but of course it would come from the top. So yes, systems would change as quarterbacks change in the fickle NFL, but that's everywhere. That doesn't change. The injury risk is the same. So what's the benefit for the NFL? Well, after those 3 years, you have pretty well-prepared players, don't you? And you already, there's still be an NFL draft, but you already have contracts with those players. They would just have to negotiate with you again, or they become free agents, available to the, all the NFL. Of course, guys would move, get cut, get injured. Some would eventually actually go to college if they couldn't make it. And then they would just be students. They wouldn't be student athletes. They'd already have their answer. They'd have their answer by the age of 20. They could go back to school for 4 years and actually be a real student. And the players playing at actual at the universities would be more truer student athletes because they would already have made a decision to forego money. Wouldn't you, at 18, wouldn't you love to have a $40,000 job, a $40,000 a year job, especially if the NFL teams provided dorms for their own minor league teams? College experience without the classes, only football, and learning it in the NFL way. Imagine if just 40 of the rivals 100 went to each of these teams. By the way, the cost issue? 40 players at 40,000 is only $1.6 million a year. I think it's probably worth a backup guard to be able to develop your Cam Newton 3 years ahead of time and have him NFL ready immediately. Now, Cam Newton is a bad choice in this analogy because he's already been so good without having all that, but imagine if you could prepare these guys. You'd weed out guys faster. Overall, your scouting would get better. You would have more prepared players. Sure, it's easier to have the free scouting the NCAA is, but if we want true student athletes, get ones that have already made a decision to forego money. Ones that didn't want to declare for the NFL minor league draft. Doesn't matter. Plus, being an NFL team and using the NFL stadiums, don't you think that if they played on Friday nights, competing with high school football, sure, but what if they played Friday nights in the NFL stadiums where you can sell alcohol? You don't think they'd recoup a lot of the money they're spending on the player salaries and the few coaches that they would need to run these teams? I don't know. Just an idea. I'm guessing with all the money coming in with the, the $18 billion the NFL is supposed to bring in 10 years from now, or whatever number they came up with during the negotiations for the new labor deal. Don't you think it wouldn't be a bad idea for them to start weeding out and not having draft busts as much? Sure, you still have the regular NFL draft, but what if you could supplant that NFL draft? What if you could hedge that NFL draft with a pool of your own players that you had for 3 years? Of course, only the guys that make it through the 3 years would be eligible to enter the NFL because we've already established that the 3-year rule is a good idea physically. Plus, these kids would be bringing in money for their families. All these good things would already be happening. The injury risk is the absolute same. Why not? So you tell me. Why is that not a good idea? Imagine a world where there's a true NFL minor league. You got real college football on Saturdays, real student athletes, guys that actually want to be educated, you know, guys who couldn't make it in the NFL minor league. Yeah, the NCAA would have to change their rules. there would have to be some negotiation that already obviously takes place between the NFL and the NCAA. They'd have to change their amateurism rules, which are already messed up in the first place. The amateurism rules are the whole reason that we're having this argument at all. There's the whole reason that we have the EA Sports deal. There's the whole reason why there's that lawsuit. That is why. It's all this. You saw that now. Get rid of amateurism. Forget it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what age you are, what you've done. You get your 4 years of eligibility no matter what. Doesn't matter if you made money in an NFL minor league. And I don't think we're going to see too many 35-year-olds going back to college and really trying out for the football team. I don't think you're going to see that happen either. So get rid of those rules. Have a true NFL minor league, and the NFL teams can do it cheaply, probably for the cost of a backup guard, or what a backup guard is going to cost in 2 years when they have to spend, 99% of the cap every year. How about that, folks? Too logical, I know, way too logical. But, I guess back to the issue at hand, we have to give the Model American of the Week. And the Model American of the Week is every delusional Penn State alumnus or student who rioted on Wednesday for a truly stupid cause. You're not bringing Joe Pa back. Any person with a sane mind will realize that he is guilty here. Of what, we don't know. But we're sure it's pretty much enough for him that once this broke, there's no way he could have kept his job. There's no sane reason to believe that he could have or should have. So every student who had this dumb idea and was acting like a really dumb 20-year-old or 18-year-old, you're the Model American of the Week. Because you need to sit back. You might want to travel outside of State College once in your life or something. You got to... There's no way where if you sit back and actually look at the facts of this thing that it's a good idea to riot. Hopefully it was some sort of bigger symbol for the end of innocence at Penn State or something. I don't know. I'm not going to try to understand it. I did not eventually end up going there. I never saw Paterno as a deity. I never put people on that sort of pedestal in the first place just out of principle. Because people are people. People make mistakes. People make horrible mistakes. And yes, the mistakes that him and the administration made, they pale in comparison to what Sandusky actually did, but the idea that they could have prevented it is sickening. And to come out in support of that, to the point that you've got to riot and break shit, grow up, get perspective, get a real life. Come on, man. Ridiculous. To the thousands that protested peacefully, good for you. That's okay. Stand up for your stuff. But rioting violently for something? For really almost anything? Ridiculous. Especially over what comes down to just a football coach. Football coach that many of us love. But he's still just a football coach. Grow up. For you people that rioted violently, good luck to you. I hope you find a way to grow up someday. And congratulations. You're nationally famous. You're a Model American of the Week.
From the regular latest edition of the Four Sky Podcast.
It's the Four Sky.
We have a Model American of the Week. Holy crap, that defense is good. Let's get on the lighter side of things.
Holy crap, that defense is good.
They are the Blue Stockings.
They'll find a way to win a couple of games, and maybe they should.
Something sports.